You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome back to a late night edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast. Marcus Thompson in the live room. This was not the Warriors' worst loss of the season. There's been some really bad performances there. You know, you go two nights earlier against the Pacers. Like I would categorize that as a worst loss considering you had all your players and the Pacers didn't. But this is probably the most heartbreaking, maybe toughest for them to absorb, considering what a win and how the game went, what a win would have meant. And we'll get to a lot of the bright spots of the night. But the last 10 seconds, two of their core players make really bad mistakes. Klay Thompson floats off Malik Beasley, who, by the way, has made the fifth most threes in the league this season, just kind of wanders off him, doesn't even go to rim protect against Nikhil Alexander-Walker, just goes to like almost watch a layup, kicks it to Beasley, he hits a big three, and then obviously Poole in the last moment doesn't protect the ball, steal, layup the other end, you give up a 5-0 run in the final 7.8 seconds to lose by one. Oh, how do you absorb that one?
Yeah, I think the positives far outweigh the negatives in this one. I mean, I understand it's got to be frustrating to watch, and the win would have meant a lot. But I just expected them to lose to go in, so that they lost to me doesn't really change much. They almost scheduled this as a loss, right? Like, I mean,
it's what made the Pacers loss.
Yeah, I think
really
the Pacers
hurt.
Loss was worse, right? I think that was worse. I think any game you were at your, you know, three best players and you lose, to me, it's not that debilitating. I found it more encouraging that they figured out a way to be in this game. We saw this already, and they got blitzed the last time they did it in New Orleans. Obviously, New Orleans is much better than the Jazz. But to me, like, this game, I walked away from this game saying, like, the days of Kuminga not playing just be over. They're done. Like, he's going to play. And obviously, he won't be this good all the time.
By the way, I feel like this is like the 18th time in his early career, including multiple times last season, where like that statement has been made, though, right?
Yeah, but they had other players before. They don't have them now. Like, you had an Otto Porter and Bealy to lean on, right? You had other options. Now they just don't have any. So I don't understand why he wouldn't play at this point. They literally need the bodies. And, you know, Moody was really good, too. So, I mean, if they walk out of this knowing, all right, we got a guy, to me, that's better. That's bigger than a loss. But obviously the loss is, like, crazy. Like, they should have won that game. And the worst part is that, like, I mean, I guess the great lessons, I guess Poole can still learn something from it. But, like, what is Klay learning at this point?
Like, it wasn't.
You can't look and be like, oh, he's going to learn from this. Like, Klay, he's been doing this for years. Like, he's the last one who should have made that mistake on the court.
He was their most veteran player that was, like, available. But that's Klay kind of right.
I mean, I feel like he should be the one saying, reminding everybody, no threes, right? I feel like he should be the one out there directing in that scenario. Like, he's the one who's played the close games in the playoffs.
Yeah,
you know, but, like, Moody got beat because he was taking away the three like they were supposed to, and he was giving up a layup, and the only out that was there was the guy that Klay left, walked away from. Dante was nearby because he was guarding his man at the three-point line. Everybody was doing their job.
Yeah, I guess in theory, yes, like the, you know, basically what, 10, 11-year veteran should be the one saying that, but we kind of know who Klay Thompson is, and that's not Klay Thompson. And that's the thing, Klay Thompson wasn't you know, if you rewatch the play, that's not him being like, oh, that's a game plan mistake where you went to go, you know, try to block a shot at the rim. You shouldn't have helped. He wasn't even helping. He was just watching.
He literally walked from the good position to a position where he's no value.
To watch the guy shoot the layup. Because Nikhil Alexander could have just easily still made the layup. Like, Klay Thompson wasn't skying in. So anyway, like, that to me, that was just a brain fart. Or, you know, whatever you want to call it. Just a, kind of an airheaded moment, which happened with Klay Thompson. I mean, you know, it wasn't really a great game for him. He hit some jumpers, but overall, inefficient night. He had another turnover, you know, late in the game that wasn't great. And then, you know, Poole, like, he's just got to, be fair,
like Draymond has cost him games with late game blunders.
Yeah. Right? Remember like when Draymond, what was it, 2 years ago? Or it might have been last year.
Charlotte.
Draymond gets two T's in this type of situation to, like, hand the game to the Hornets. Steph Curry against the Pacers last season left Justin Holiday in a very similar situation.
What's his name from Denver?
Monte Morris,
game winner.
Yep, that's exactly right. In a complete 0-3 situation. So, yeah, you're right. It is what it is. Poole, I think Poole's probably hurts a bit more because, you know, you give up three. You're still up one. You get the ball in Poole's hands. He is the best free throw shooter in the NBA last season. You know, if he just grabs it, chest it, gets a foul. Or if he just
makes the one before that, they play in overtime.
Well, that too. But also, you know, he gets the foul, you make two. And only a three can even force overtime. So,
all right, I'm going to do it, Slater. I'm going to do it. I don't even like doing it. I can't stand this. But, I mean, at some point, a foul is a foul. Like, I don't think he gets blamed for a no call that he should have got. Like, you could say, hey, man, hold this tighter. But then it's a jump ball, and he's jumping against Olynyk, right? Like, so, I mean, he's trying to do what he does to get out of the – I mean, to me, the issue was dribbling – was going to the trap area. Like, that's always a mistake. Klay did the same thing right before, got trapped, lost the ball. When you dribble to a trap area, I think he was trying to get out of the trap area, catch it and go. But the bottom line, he got fouled twice. And they didn't call it, and that's how it goes. You know, so I'm not that mad at Jordan Poole. Like, if they call the foul, we're not saying he did anything wrong. If they don't call the foul, like, they lose the game. To me, that feels more like you win some, you lose some. Kind of like the Kevin Hurt, right? Like, hey, man, that's how it goes. So I don't really blame him for that. You know, like, he didn't do it. Like, you can't tell people to say, hey, man, you got to be prepared to get hacked. I mean, you do tell him that, but it's just not, to me, it's not a blame when he gets fouled and there is no call. To me, the bigger blame was missing a free throw that would have put him up five to make now that three is a 2-point game. And at best, in that situation, it's a tie ball game, and you're going to overtime. To me, that was the bigger thing. That was on Poole. The foul was more on the ref not calling the foul.
Yeah, and again, I haven't even looked at a close enough view to know if he got all ball or he might have hit some arm. But what's crazy is, like, in a situation like that where the referee knows the team wants to foul, right? If they don't get the steal, like, they're coming in a pretty risky situation, usually fine with a whistle. That is almost always called, like, a hard chop.
Always
in that situation.
Always called.
Yeah.
I mean, even like, if that you was get ball, exciting. He came around the other side, swung wildly. Like, that's one of those situations you call a foul, and then you let them use the challenge. And if it's not a foul, you show it on replay, but it's 99% of the time a foul. But that wasn't even the one to me. The one is the ball gets knocked away.
Olynyk.
And Olynyk just tackles him.
Yeah, when it's in a loose ball situation, is a little bit.
You can't do that. It's just illegal. Like, it's illegal. I mean, if he was going for the ball, I got it. He literally tackled him so he couldn't get the ball. Like that, I mean, the ref is standing right there. I mean, like, that's what happens when you don't secure the game. But that's like, you know, that's going to be on a 2-minute report.
Yeah. So, you know, it masks a lot of things. But, you know, Poole had a great game, by the way. He had 21 in the first half. I can't remember exactly what he finished with. How about that floater he had? That, you know, basically left the screen at one point. He had some deep threes. He did what I think we saw him do a couple times last season when they won game with Steph and Draymond sat and they won a few games. Like, Poole was aggressive and productive.
Yeah.
And it's what we hadn't really seen in the Pelicans games that they kind of punted. And that's why they, you know, I'd say he was probably reason number one that they were in position to steal this game away. Like, should have won this game in Utah.
And I think that's going to be, I think one thing we're seeing is he's getting to a point where he can really punish poor defenses, right? The good ones give him problems. But the bad ones, right, especially if they leave him in ISO against a guy who, you know, is not that great on ISO, like, he can punish you. And to me, that's like the bare minimum of what he can do right now. If he's in a situation where the other team is really good defensively, now, you know, he's got to use that leverage to draw toward him and kick it so somebody else can cook. But, like, for the last few games, we've seen him, like, take advantage of rough defenses, you know, or people who are not together, right? Like, he can get by. We're starting to see him kind of find that rhythm again. I don't know if it helps him against Boston, Milwaukee, but they need Poole to start torching some teams and punishing them. And the interesting part was, like, he did it in a way with the ball in his hand, kind of running the show, and Klay on the court. So to me, that was the interesting part, that he could still, like, even though Klay was taking quite a bit of shots, he was still able to kind of do his thing, which, you know, I feel like that's Poole getting kind of his confidence back.
Yeah. So I think we should talk Kuminga, because it was 24, like, loud points, forceful points. It's one of, you know, his first 2 points of the game, he just skies for a defensive rebound around two people and just brings it down the court, drives it immediately into the lane. I don't remember who he was going against. It might have been Nikhil Alexander-Walker, but just, like, shoulders them off, layup. And then it was just, like, that was a sign of what was to come. I mean, 8 of his 9 shots are – his makes are inside the line. Pretty much all of them are at the rim except for one corner three, which, you know, they had left him and it was good. He hit it and he turned to the Utah bench and was like, don't leave me. But pretty much everything was where you want him to be, at the rim. Late game buckets, you know, on the drive, good cutting dunks. He had a putback dunk that was insane. He had a post up where he just...
Yeah, I told this what I said, man. Get
yeah. Where he just... Yeah, again, I think this one might have been on either – I think it was Malik Beasley. He just, like, threw him into the stanchion and then just dunked on him. That was a lot.
But the play of the night, Slater, you tweeted it out. Game on the line, proven scorer, ISO, and he clamped Jordan Clarkson. Like, that was impressive.
And nobody was more surprised than Jordan Clarkson and upset him.
He was. He's like, hold on, man. This dude is staying with me. Like, his ability to just stay in front of his man in space on one of, like, the more shiftier dudes and still contest the three. Like, that was, like, the blueprint for what you'd expect from Kuminga defensively. That reminded me of last – remember they had thrown him at point? They threw him on DeRozan. And he's just really good at keeping a guy in front of you, but, you know, keeping that little bit of space so you can, you know, hit the angle and not get a blow by, but also contest because he's so athletic. That was a clutch defensive stop with no help behind him. It was just one-on-one, and Clarkson is a bucket getter. That was impressive. When you tweeted that, that's exactly what I was like, you know, that was the play of the night. So much that, you know, he lost his composure, even though that flagrant two was whack. But,
well, I think Clarkson doesn't get a flagrant two if at one point during the weird, you know, normal NBA back and forth, he squared up. It was so weird. It went from, he was literally like, looked like he was going like, my bad.
Yeah, it looked like he was trying to hold him up. My bad.
And then suddenly he just went, you know, outward.
Let's go.
That was strange.
Them knuckles were oddly positioned too. Elbows in, baby. Elbows
I know. But, you know, it's the challenge, and, like, this is a challenge we've discussed so much over the last couple of years, but becomes, you know, they're playing the Celtics on Saturday night. At this point, Wiggins is not going to be there, which we can get to how difficult a game that's going to be. But, you know, so Kuminga probably has a larger role just because Wiggins is not going to be there. But Steph and Draymond are going to be out there for, you know, 36 minutes each. How does Kuminga stay this aggressive, stay this forceful offensively within an ecosystem that includes Steph and Draymond. You know, how does he not only do what he's been doing lately, which is, you know, he's guarding good players. He's going to guard Tatum. He's going to guard Brown, I'm sure, on Saturday on ABC, but also not just, you know, have those 0 points, 3 points, whatever games where he's just out there like, I need to do everything Steve Kerr is telling me to do and not be aggressive offensively. Like, how does he mesh these together so you get what you get tonight with everything else while Steph and Draymond are still there?
I mean, I think part of it is, you know, Kerr relaxing a bit on the, you know, the mistakes, you know, on like, just to give him a little bit of freedom. To me, as long as he's not like trying to create from, you know, 30 feet out or like taking too many threes because he's wide open, like, to me, he's fine. He just needs to be on the floor with somebody who can space the floor, because he's really good when that lane is open. So if he just sees the slash area, he's pretty good at it. So tonight, because Poole and Clay were going, it felt like the floor was just wider and he could take advantage of that. To me, the minutes, I'm probably giving them Jermichael Green's minutes.
Man, you know, you could make an argument after tonight, like try Wiseman in the Jermichael Green minutes. And I do kind of, it was 5 minutes, but I wouldn't mind talking Wiseman. But yeah, Jermichael
Green. I feel like Wiseman was supposed to play when they thought they was going to lose. And then it was like, hold on now.
Yeah, he didn't play in the second half. After giving like his five best minutes of the season in the first half, he didn't play in the second half. I thought that was a little curious because you're playing Jermichael Green and he's not helping right now.
No, but you know how they go. Like, so without Wiggins, they're probably going to start like Poole, right? So it's Steph, Clay, Poole, Draymond, Looney. And like, I mean, I'd listen to an argument where that's Kuminga instead of Jordan Poole, but
maybe on Saturday. Well, I wouldn't just say Saturday. Maybe the next 2 nights. What if you start him against Tatum and start him against Giannis the next?
Yeah,
two
that's
games?
What I'm saying. Like, and that gives him like his purpose, right? Where it's like, yo, you just gotta guard. You know, only issue is like he might get in the early foul trouble, and you kind of want him later. But to me, if you put him in a lineup where you bring out Looney, put in Kuminga, and now like Draymond is the five, but you got these shooters on the floor that opens up the space. I mean, Draymond will have to hold it down. It kind of depends on the lineup, because to me, the best way for Kuminga to play defense is on the ball right now. So that almost puts Clay at the four, which, you know, it's probably better than him walking away from the 3-point shooter, but if you got like Kuminga giving himself juice and energy by guarding the ball out there, and then on the other end, you know, the floor space, because he's on the floor with shooters, you got Draymond passing, like those slasher lanes are open, and man, it's not like for 12 minutes, right? It's like, you know, you pull Looney at the 6-minute mark. You know what I'm saying? You give him 4 or 5 minutes there where he's with Steph and them, you know, and you do it again, you know, like, you know, third quarter, right? Then you find him some minutes. Then you play him, obviously, with that second unit in the second and third quarters. But to me, like, he needs those minutes with shooters on the floor, because he can take advantage of those slashing opportunities or one-on-one opportunities. You can even post him in that scenario. To me, that's how you do it. That's how you get it to him. But it begins with the defensive assignment. I feel like if he's got one, like, kind of sink your teeth into it like a bulldog, it'll help him kind of develop the juice. You know, and then he starts getting all the praise, right? Like, they start patting him, and he responds to that. And they're like, yeah, man, good D, good job. You can hear them yelling. He likes that stuff.
I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs.
so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, I want to talk about three other players from the game tonight. Moses Moody, you mentioned he was like closing, you know, or at least he was in for a chunk of the important moments of the fourth quarter.
And got that pass at the end.
Yeah,
like, yeah, he was right there from getting that. He get a deflection right there. They win the game.
And he hit two huge threes, and I mean, part of the reason he's not been able to grasp playing time has been an inability to do some of the stuff consistently that they want him to do. I mean, obviously, he can be a little sloppy and overly aggressive offensively, turnover prone, as we know. He's lucky he didn't get called for a travel in an important situation tonight where he caught and his feet were kind of scattery, but they didn't call it. He is not defensively on the perimeter. He's getting blown by a bit more than you'd like. I actually thought this was one of his better defensive games, but that's overall been a problem. The one thing I would say about him, and you saw it again tonight, if he's rising up for an open three at any moment in time, it could be first quarter, you know, of the third regular season game. It can be fourth quarter tonight with you feel like the game's on the line. If he makes it, they're in it. If he doesn't, they're not. Or it can be the West Finals against the Dallas Mavericks as a rookie. Like, you feel good about him shooting the three. Like, his
like
three
fresh off the bench or been in the game a while, right? Either way.
Like, I'm not saying he's a 46%, like, absolute sniper. You know, he's probably in his career going to live, my guess would be 38, 39. But he is unfazed. The form looks great. And he's just confident in it. It's just like when he's rising up for any type of three at this point of his career, I'm like, I think it's going in. And that's a pretty important thing.
Yeah, his problem is Dante DiVincenzo, though. Like,
that's the next guy I want to talk to.
Yeah, the mistakes that he's making are like the negatives he brings that you're talking about are the positives for Dante DiVincenzo. So, like, it feels like that's his kind of window to get minutes. He's not really in that Wiggins window. He's in that Dante window, you know.
Well, it's like, yeah, whereas you're looking at Wiseman like, dude, you can't beat out Jamichael Green. Where you're looking at Moody like, okay, I understand why you can't beat out Dante.
You can't beat out Dante. Yeah, exactly. Especially because what they really want from Moody, like, Dante is bringing it, man. Like, that kind of pressure, that constant hustle and effort, like, and he doesn't make a lot of mistakes defensively, and he's hard to get around. Like, you can get around him, but you gotta get around him. Like, he's there and he's following, he's trailing. I mean he's just been really good. Like, you gotta have him on the floor. Like, even the other veterans are like, he's gotta be on the floor. Like, he's a winner. He makes winning plays. To me, that's Moody's biggest issue right now, is that he's essentially been put behind Dante on the depth chart. And it's tough because Dante is, you know, behind like Clay, right? Or whatever guard, pick one, Steph. And so that automatically makes him third string, where you would think generally he's behind Wiggins and then Kuminga's behind Draymond, but it's just not working out like that. And maybe with Wiggins being out, like, that's a chance to get him some minutes there. But, like, to me, this is just proof positive that these dudes just need to be able to play and play without the fear that sometimes, like, hampers their game. And maybe that's something they just got to learn as young players. So, like, no matter if it's 7 minutes, I still got to be able to play with the same kind of freedom and calmness as if I don't think I'm coming out. But they just, you know, you could tell, like, when they know they're going to play, They just kind of have like a freedom about them.
Kuminga for sure.
Kuminga for sure, right? Like he's a different player, but he know, oh, you ain't got nobody behind me? All right, I'm good. So like Moody, yeah, you're right. Moody is better at like just kind of playing the way he wants to play, no matter how many minutes he gets. But I just feel like their answer is minutes. And you've been saying this since October of 2021. Like get those dudes minutes. Why are they not playing preseason games? But it just feels like the answer is minutes. So,
yeah.
But I do think it's good that he's got to earn them. Like, hey, man, you see Dante? Watch Dante. You do what Dante do, you get on the court. Like, that's not the worst thing for Moody.
Yeah, so Dante was the second guy I wanted to talk about. I thought this was maybe his best game this season. He had, at one point, I don't know if this is what he finished with, but I believe it was like 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals at least. You know, he was like jumping passing lanes, and you kind of already laid out all of what he's doing. But I thought he was like a major reason that they almost won this game tonight.
No question. He feel like he can, you know, his ability to kind of impact the game, like as that, you know, GP2 kind of on-ball defender or as, like, the poised point guard. I mean, this is proven to be incredibly valuable. You know what I'm saying? Like, they can, like, he can calm a situation down. And once he, you know, I think he made, what, 1-3 tonight? I think once his shots start falling, if it starts falling at the clip, like, from Milwaukee.
But that is a big question. You know, this isn't. You know, if you look at we mentioned all the stuff that DiVincenzo does that Moody isn't right now. Moody's three is a lot more sure than DiVincenzo's three is.
The crazy part is it looks good, DiVincenzo. It just
It just goes in at like 33, you know.
Yeah, right. It just doesn't drop at that rate. But it don't look bad. And when you know, he's one of the people it's either all net or he ain't making it. Like, he don't get no rattle or anything. I feel like it's he drills it perfectly or he doesn't make it. But to me, like, he gives you two things that they need. And the third thing, if he finds a shot, he's almost like the perfect, like, backcourt player to come in with them. But the shot's got to come around, like, you know, I think when 1 year Milwaukee, they shoot like 38%. I mean, if he ever get anywhere up there,
yeah,
like, he's going to be ideal. He's going to be ideal.
Yeah, his catch.
And they comfortable with him, too. That's the thing. Like, you know, the superstars have a way of, like, letting you know who can rock with them and who can't.
You know who likes
him? They just like Dante.
Steph really likes him. DiVincenzo. Oh, yeah, Steph really likes DiVincenzo. You know, and he's made that clear. Dante. You know, you can see it on the court, Steph but loves off Dante. The court, too. You can tell he likes him.
Yeah, Steph loves Dante.
I think Draymond likes last one I wanted to talk about, why he reappears. You know, I think it was, like 16, 17, 18 days, something like that. 7 games, I know, down in the G League. And, you know, you would talk to people behind the scenes, and there was definitely like, hey, we don't want to bring him up and back, up and back. It wanted to be like one long stint. Once he's back for good. You kind of get the feeling that they might send him back, like, literally, like, this week to, you know,
the aberration, huh?
Yeah, because I think they just, you know, came to the conclusion that they weren't going to bring Steph, Draymond, and Wiggins, and particularly the Draymond absence opened the door for Wiseman to come and maybe even get some minutes in Utah. So they brought him to Utah. So I guess they've kind of backed off the whole back and forth plan. But, you know, he didn't – like, I thought his 5 minutes at least showed you, hey, you know, he's making incremental improvements. Like, the Santa Cruz time is helping him. He wasn't perfect, but he had a really nice seal catch dunk. He had a couple traffic rebounds, including an offensive rebound and a kick out to Lamb. Lamb missed the three, but it was a nice play. Kelly Olynyk had this weird drive at him where, like, Wiseman's presence kind of spooked Kelly Olynyk into, like, a really bad layup, and he got the rebound from it. And it was like small moment of defensive impact that you haven't been seeing from Wiseman, where you're like, all right, hey, you scared somebody on the drive. He still had got scored on
a veteran too, right? Like,
yes, I know. Although Kelly Olynyk's a weird player, but again, it was 5 minutes.
Do you think they were minus 3? Do you think Do you think this means there's a plan to bring him back sooner than they might have thought?
Well, Steve
Whereas,
Kerr,
like, maybe
even
this was, you know,
Steve even today
he's a long Z Libra.
Well, Steve even today made it clear, like, look, if he's not going to be in the rotation on a nightly basis, it's better for him to be getting, you know, 28, 30 minutes in the G League, which I think Wiseman agrees with too. You know, Wiseman wants to, like, play 28 minutes. Now, he'd prefer to be playing 28 minutes for the NBA team, but if he's not, and it's pretty clear he's not going to right now, and I wouldn't advise it. I don't think any of us would advise that he's suddenly, like, a major part of the rotation. Even if you're like, hey, you're going to nudge him into Jermichael Green's minutes and give him, like, you know, tonight he gets 5. Like, let's say he was getting 5 to 10 minutes for the Warriors. Is that really better than him getting 28 in much more freedom with the Santa Cruz? I don't think it is, considering what he needs. And I thought this was an example tonight of why Santa Cruz helps. Like, I thought he looked more confident and better than he did the last time we saw him with the Warriors, which would mean he's growing a little bit, even if it's, you know, in a small way down in Santa Cruz. I don't want to make any grand proclamations off 5 minutes. It's just, you know, it's better than him, you know, playing poorly in those 5 minutes.
So I'm curious if, like, maybe they said, all right, we're going to keep him down there to the All-Star break, right? see where we are. Or maybe he plays the entire G League season and then we see where he is in March. I wonder if the ability to kind of test him in this little situation, or maybe throw him a bone, is men saying, hey man, this is working. Maybe we can bring him back sooner than we thought. Cause I don't know if just watching tonight, like, I don't know that playing him 10 minutes in the NBA isn't, like, helpful for him. Like, I mean, I get the
impact. But is it more helpful?
A bunch of yeah. I mean, I think now, right now, it's more helpful to be in the G League. But at some point in, you know, say, you know, 2 more weeks, right? A month, whatever. You get to January. Now, is it still beneficial, right? He's played a half a season. He's got 30 games under his belt or whatever it is. Now is the 10 minutes here at the league where you can turn it to 12 or 15. I don't know. Maybe I'm still just kind of trying to figure out this universe where he's the backup center, because I already said it on a previous boss. But
I wondered if
this means it's a little bit more possible than it might have been when he went down.
Yeah, I think it's possible for him to rediscover enough form to take Jermichael Green's minutes. I think you saw it opening night against the Lakers. I think you saw it in preseason against the Wizards. I think he spiraled a little bit after that, but I think he can prove himself capable of being their backup center. The one thing I would not do is reinsert him into the rotation at an unsettled time when you're 13-13 right now. You're about to play the Celtics at home on Saturday. Then you're going on a road trip, 6-gamer with a bunch of back-to-backs, and you're starting off in Milwaukee. Like, you don't want to. That's how you get him back in the spiral, right? You know,
I mean, he started his career in Milwaukee. Why not just, you know what I'm saying, full circle? As a starter, put him in the lineup.
Oh, my. You just don't want him to, like, let's say the Warriors get blown out Saturday against the Celtics, and even though he plays 9 minutes, they're a -8 in those 9 minutes, and that's the postgame story. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think you want that, especially when it's like, hey, how about he's just, like, playing?
Not now. I just wonder. Yeah.
Eventually.
I mean, look, there's some thought that he probably would never come back after. Right? Like, there was when he left, it was like, will he ever come back and play for the Warriors? So it just feels like there's potential to make progress. And
I think you've seen a little bit.
Like, they need bodies.
I think you've seen.
They just need bodies, man.
It's
at some point, he's got a heartbeat.
So it's not where his career anybody wanted or predicted it to be, you know, within the Warriors. But, like, to me, he made progress in his 2 weeks away with Santa Cruz. I thought in his last G League game was actually pretty good. I watched, you know, the fourth quarter, and he was, like, good in it, you know, compared to earlier in the week when Nemus Kita, like, drop 38 and 18 on him or whatever. So what?
Hey, sometimes getting... somebody got to cook you, man. You got to get cooked. That's what he missed out on, getting cooked. Learn them lessons. That's what happens when you don't play for 2 years. You'll have them horror stories of getting lit up for 38.
Yeah. All right. Celtics Saturday, no Andrew Wiggins, which that is going to be a major problem.
Why would they need Andrew Wiggins? Does the Celtics have a lot of wings or something?
The Celtics were up 40 in Phoenix at one point.
They were destroying Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? They're probably going to be pretty motivated Saturday.
Oh, you think? Yeah, this is going to be a message. ABC Saturday night? That's going to be a tough game, man. It's a tough game, mostly, especially, not, forget the defense, right? We obviously know Boston's defense is tough. Their offense is so potent.
It's historic so right now.
Yeah, like, against a team that just hasn't been able to consistently play good defense yet this season. Like, they, just from the looks of it right now, they are toast against that offense. Like, I don't know how they'll be able to score to keep up with that level of offense, and their best perimeter defender is not playing. So it just feels like it's going to be a rough night for their defense. And maybe, you know, we've seen, you know, what getting hot from three can do. We've seen what Steph can do. So, you know, there is a universe where it's like a 130-130 type game. But I just don't think they'll be able to stop Boston from scoring, which means they got to bring it offensively. And
this is the toughest team in the league to –
Yes.
Not currently, because the toughest team to score against in the league currently is who they're playing to start the road trip on Tuesday. But, you know, like Draymond has talked about it, like this is a really difficult team for Draymond to play with the like – now, no Robert Williams. That's huge. But, you know, we don't need to get into a preview of the game. Celtics are going to be favored, clearly, in this game, especially without Wiggins. But
you know, they have yet to lose to a Western Conference team.
Undefeated. Interesting.
Undefeated against the West. I mean, because they get buckets. It's hard. Like, you come west, and you're supposed to be facing these, you know, offensive juggernauts, but they are the juggernaut. It's not that East Coast ball tight defense coming in anymore. Nah. This is a high potent offense that make a lot of threes.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will talk to you Saturday night. Let's do a post game pod Saturday night. Let's commit to
one. You think they're going to want this? They already talking about you only pod after losses.
Well, let's just.
Maybe we should wait till after the Milwaukee game when they win.
Okay. All right. We will talk to you at some point in the near future.